Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I don't usually do the shows on Monday. However, Reginald Clements, a wrongfully convicted individual, has been doing the shows on Monday evenings, and I guess the person that was bringing him on did not respond to him, so he asked if I could do it. The problem is, we never know when they're going to have time off, when they're going to be in lockdown, or when they're not going to be able to come out of their cells on time. This is a problem, and I'm glad these things happen occasionally because it gives the audience, people that are unaware of the penal system and the way it operates, it gives you an idea of what we face in the United States prisons. It's unfortunate that people have to go by schedules. They have to be told when to eat, when to get up, when to go to bed, when to use the phones, when to go to the showers. And these are problems that seem so unfair and inhumane. And again, I'm going to mention that the United States of America is the only country in the world with not only mass incarceration, but with all these inhumane conditions, treatment, and deprivations. But we're going to be talking anyway about some of these things, and I usually do a Tuesday show at this time, well, at 6:30 Eastern Daylight Time. However, this Tuesday, most likely I won't be doing it. Wednesday, I will be having back on with us Franz Dahl, former 27-year warden, who will be talking, not only talking about the differences between the two countries, the United States and the European countries and other countries, as a matter of fact. But Franz will also be bringing a couple of guests on with him. And these are two people that have recently written a book. One of them is a former prisoner, and he's going to be talking about the things that he himself has gone through as a prisoner. And he's also going to be talking about the book that he and his co-author, had published. And we will be hearing from him on Wednesday as well. They will just be introducing themselves, and then I will be bringing them on at a later time, a later date, because Wednesdays have been Franz Dahl's time to call in and to do the show. I also want to talk about some of these things that are going on. The United States Department of Justice apparently is working on some reform in the prisons, and I'm proud to say that because I think that it's time that we did start falling into place with other countries when it comes to prisons. We have Reginald Clements calling in now, so if everyone will just be patient.
An offender at the Jefferson City Correctional Center.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
To accept this free call, press 1. To refuse this, thank you. For
okay,
using
audience.
Securus. You may start the conversation now.
We now have Reginald Clements on, and this is going to be his show. He is going to be talking. Hopefully, we'll be able to get it without an echo. Okay.
And hopefully, there is an echo in the background when I'm talking.
Okay, go ahead.
The connections are very sporadic. Hello, how are you doing? My name is Reginald Clements. I'm a former death row inmate. I am now serving 5 life sentences with 32 years in the Missouri Department of Corrections. And I continue to rehabilitate myself and to try to be a better man and a better human being. And that's primarily what the focus of this show is. Now, I would like to present to everyone who's listening and to everyone who's interested in hearing about and learning about some of these rehabilitative programs that we have in the Department of Corrections. And not only that, something I would like to bring to light and shed light on is the fact that the Missouri Department of Corrections, along with other prison rehabilitative programs, are often started by and maintained by peer-to-peer study groups and peer-to-peer facilitation and rehabilitation between prisoners, where we aid and assist one another in our rehabilitation. And I don't want to be remiss to say thank you, Leona, for offering me the opportunity to share this with everyone and then get the word out about this program called Reentry 2030. Reentry 2030 is adaptation and advancement of a program called Reentry, but now it's Reentry 2030. They just modified it, and we're doing some restructuring. And I would also like to make it known that we're going to be having Jerry Husky on.
Right.
And Jerry Husky's been very involved with the reentry program and advancing and developing the program and maintaining the classes. I just got over here 3 weeks ago, and I'm loving the opportunity to help people who are reentering society and help put together a program and help structure things to lay the foundation for them to have a successful future. And the peer-to-peer structure works like this, where long-term offenders who have been serving extensive amount of time and who have life without or have like over 100 years or whatever, they are happily used, to push and advance the...
this call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
The agenda for rehabilitation and against recidivism and reoffending. I would like to bring in Jerry Husky and have him introduce himself and tell us more about what he's done and what he's got out of the program of reentry in Missouri. Jerry, are you there?
My friend here introduced
okay.
me. My name is Jerry Husky. I am currently serving a 41-year consecutive sentence for involuntary manslaughter. I am a facilitator here within the reentry program, which just kicked off a couple months ago, as Caldeer said, the 2030 initiative. And what that means is we as facilitators, most of us do have a long-term sentence, and we are attempting to give back by showing these short-term offenders how they can become viable members and reintegrate back into their prospective communities as a valuable resource. And that's being done by several different organizations throughout Missouri now are cooperating with us, Missouri Department of Labor, Missouri Mental Health, Office of the Administration, our governor, and Precise. And then we have also Missouri Department of Social Services, Missouri Department of Education, as well as our staff members here, Mr. Ebris and several of them are working with us to help these offenders actually re-enter society with a whole different concept, where before offenders were looked at as, unhirable and undesirable. Now, with everything that is transpiring throughout society, offenders are getting that actual second opportunity that they need to get, to where they're not, their self-esteem is no longer suffering, to where their substance abuse problems, and that's where I come in here as a reentry facilitator. I teach the substance abuse and relapse prevention course here. I get the offenders to recognize where their core belief and where the core issue is so that we can begin to help them recover.
One of the things I like to highlight when I listen to you speak is there is a written on a lot of prisoners. And now the prisons are overcrowded, and the funds are not being utilized properly when it comes to rehabilitation, medical care, and different amenities that are necessary for people to survive.
and it's become an economic strain in a lot of places. Also, what I'm saying, there's staffing issues. And one thing you just have to know that it's a lot of research and what has proven that prisoners are rehabilitatable is here recently and in the past 10 years, there's been a lot of juveniles that were released from under sentences of life without. And the recidivism rate amongst those juveniles who have had life without has been reduced.
Announcing something that I had received the other day. The Department of Justice recently announced that there's new steps in improving criminal justice practices.
The United call States is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
The United States Department of Justice recently announced several criminal justice reforms, particularly regarding policing, how prisoners are treated, discrimination, and sentencing disparities. The reform reflects the broader consensus among Americans that some criminal justice practices and policy methods must be reformed more fairly without reducing public safety. They have recently come up with six ways the Department of Justice is working towards criminal justice reform. And some of the things that you and, I'm sorry, what was his first name again? Jerry, what you and Jerry have mentioned, some of them include that with the medical and also the educational. But one of the things that we're looking at is laying out a criteria for improving conditions of confinement of prison for prisoners. The DOG released new criteria for how incarcerated individuals should be housed, particularly regarding restrictive housing and efforts to reduce the need for and use of restrictive housing. You're going to be getting cut off, so you'll be calling back, right? Okay. Outlining guidelines on preventing racial profiling within the legal prisons and in the streets, and this is nationwide.
The caller has hung up.
Fine.
Leona
is with Leona.
Uh-huh.
If I can, this is Jerry. Yeah, Caldera is calling right back. The problem with most of that is those programs are going to be federally regulated, not statewide regulated.
Well,
and
this is for no. This is for,
and that is.
This is for both. This is for both federal and state. This is why it's so good, because they mentioned that the supporting actions to reduce criminal justice system interaction safely. They talked about the problems we have in this country. They say the United States incarcerates some 2.2 million, I say 2.3 million, between its state and federal prisons and jails, more than any other country. This is coming from the Department of Justice, more than any other country in the world, quadruple the 500,000 people it incarcerated 30 years ago. The United States spends about $182 billion on incarceration each year, alleging that punishment for crime via incarceration is a sufficient deterrent to crime. However, while crime rates fell between the 1990s and early 2000s, they have more or less plateaued over the last 20 years with occasional dips. There are all other ways to improve results for offenders and simultaneously deter criminal activity. And criminal practice reform efforts to date have typically sought to achieve these objectives by providing meaningful sentencing reform, reducing repeat offenders. To deter criminal activity, criminal justice reform efforts to date have typically sought to achieve these objectives by providing meaningful sentencing reform, reducing repeat offenders, curbing recidivism, and supporting law enforcement. More broadly, criminal justice reform efforts typically revolve around important topics like sentencing reform, which is something that the Sentencing Commission is working on, the sentencing reform as well, alternatives to incarceration, clemency, abolishing the death penalty, reducing racial profiling, abolishing solitary confinement, improving policing, and supporting formerly incarcerated individuals through reentry. One area that does not receive enough focus is educating inmates and supporting them through real reform efforts while they are in prison so that they may have better lives post-incarceration. Inmates need support and programs that improve their self-respect, communication abilities, and personal relationship skills. They must be taught how to avoid criminal behavior and break destructive habits. They need to be given tools to address life's challenges without resorting to criminal activity as a solution to their problems. The United States criminal justice and incarceration system must provide those individuals who became entwined within those systems with the life skills they need to become productive, responsible members of their communities. The Department of Justice is progressing toward a more fair, equitable, and effective criminal justice system. However, much work must be done to create a system that truly reforms offenders while reducing crime. And they, if you want to respond to that, if you want to respond to that, or even you, Rowena, if you want to respond to that, please feel free to.
Yes, I'd like to respond to that. I hear what he's not. I think you, he was saying that at the state level, and you were saying that they address everything from the state. Do you know what kind of structural barriers that they're going to specifically address? Is there a job programs and, you know, for housing and education and all those things? Because that's one of the things that affects them the most when they get out, or even when they have jobs, transportation.
Now, Rowena, are you addressing that to the Department of Justice or to Andrews? I keep forgetting his
name. Anyone. You, if you said you read about the, is that the reentry program?
The Department of Justice is, this is something recent, and it's the White House Executive Order on Advancing Effective Accountable Policing and Criminal Justice Practices. This is coming from the White House. And this is, as I mentioned to our guest, this is both federal and state prisons.
And state. Yeah, this is what I was talking about. I think that program is called, that initiative is Reentry 2030. And so they were supposed to look at offering them by 2030, which is, I was looking at, you know, that's like, what, 7 years from now? And so we have people getting it right now.
Okay, Reginald wants to say something.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. If I may interject, please. Thank you. Reentry 2030 is a program that it's based on the foundation of reentry, and it's because of the success of the reentry program. The governor and the director of the Missouri Department of Correction is a state-based program, and their association with other states and some federal programs. And what we're doing, what you're looking at us to do, is to craft out a model of what would be a very effective or most effective rehabilitation tool with their cooperation.
This
so
call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
The governor and the director. So, and the 2030 program is going to be used nationwide once we get everything established here. And we build out this model. It's going to be like, kind of like franchising it out. Well, and when it comes to the question, relates to housing and employment, we're working on partnering with the activist groups and organizations to create a pipeline out of prison, because they've already created the pipeline to prison. So we're putting together a structure that is based
upon this call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Based upon a five-year plan, where if you keep a person, if you put together a five-year plan that says to keep a person from residential assistance, and it's been proven statistically, if a person doesn't commit a crime within 5 years of after being released, they don't come back to prison. And if a person is doing five years on a life sentence, between the federal government and the federal prison system, a life sentence you don't get parole. In the state, on a life sentence with parole can be parole. We're going to have an opportunity to show is that prisoners are not thrown away. And prisoners can be rehabilitated and safe to return back into society, regardless of how heinous our crimes are. And there are some of us that there are a lot of us that take accountability for our actions. And we are remorseful for our actions. But the prison system doesn't recognize that a lot of times because they think that we're running game and all that. But that lack of recognition throws off the perspective of what is rehabilitation, what does it really look like, and what is the honest and true measuring stick. And those are some of the things that we're looking to correct. And we're looking to create a monitoring system to give prisoners recognition for helping people be rehabilitated, as well as who's been rehabilitated, what are our efforts and credentials that we accumulate. But Jerry, would you want to say something?
Yeah, I a couple of points I'd like to touch on where you were asking, Leona, about the housing, the help with, like, transportation and stuff like that. And as Claudia stated, that's where the 2030 initiative is kicking off. Missouri received a $30 billion grant to assist us in helping the prisoners with a short amount of time, right, offenders that are going to be reentering their prospective communities to help them successfully reintegrate. And that is by helping them with medical care, clothing, food, transportation. Those are all issues, right, that are a big deal to someone that has been locked up for any amount of time. And like Calder said, the system itself doesn't believe that some people are redeemable. When in fact, I mean, if you spend over 5 years here, I believe you're not going to be the same person. And especially a youngster that committed a crime, let's say when they were 18, 19 years old, as we all know, their mental thought process is not the same as someone that is over 25. So therefore, when they hit that 25, their mental capabilities are different. The way they look at life is much different. So that's where reentry, right, is helping these people. Right, you're right, Calder. It drops down to a 10% recidivism with these guys that have been here for any length of time. In Norway, it's 10% recidivism. I see what he's saying.
Well, Wednesday, I'm going to be interviewing a former warden, 27-year warden. His name is Franz Dow. He's from Amsterdam. And also, I mentioned this earlier, and they talk a lot about Norway is the role model prison for prisons throughout the world. And a lot of these other countries, we are the only country in the world that has mass incarceration. And some people say below China, but the United States is past China in mass incarceration. And that's a known fact. So a lot of these things that are happening, and I believe the Department of Justice now is looking at that.
Leon, one thing that I did want to comment on also is you're 100% correct there. The United States, through mass incarceration, actually, if you look at all the numbers, we incarcerate more people than all of the other countries put together, all of them, which you're right, it's about 2.3 million, people, right? So therefore, their answer to everything anymore, well, I look at this as
Thank
kind of a medieval.
Securus. Good guy.
Okay, Reginald?
I'll let Eric pick up where he left off.
Okay, before we go any further, I'd like to, Rowena Andrews, I'd like to have you introduce yourself, Rowena. Let the audience know what you do. She works with talking about life coaching and life. This woman has a lot of experience working with other people and helping in areas of education and other things like that.
Okay, my name is Rowena Andrews, and I am a special educator also in leadership where I had a prison ministry, and now I have a life skills education and counseling program that I'm reinstating. Basically, I understand a lot of what he was saying, and I did look up some of the things that were going on, and he was correct. Reentry is going to be allocated to the state level. My concern is that when you compare them to Asia or even Norway, that is one of those, like, what do you call it, a monolithic society with one, mainly one racial group. And what we have to understand here, we have socioeconomic, because you're going to have poor whites and the black and brown people, the opportunity that they need to get. And what he was saying, I was impressed by him saying that when they get those interventions, that it reduces to 10%. So obviously there's a need, and at the state level, they need to have, I guess it's going to be individual plans to do it, because I haven't found any plan right now for that reentry 2030. They're just starting, so no one knows. So this is a good thing to learn about all the things that need to be put in place from the inmates and people that work with them.
Exactly. And, you know, we have to address something else real quickly. I wanted to say this before, Reggie, before you respond. We have to look at the epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions that are not being addressed. Everybody is just being thrown into prison without looking at the fact that these people need treatment in order to be rehabilitated and released. And we look at the medical providers in these prisons, these contracted medical providers that are not doing their jobs. They're not experienced. They're picking the cheapest contracted providers they can get. And these providers are causing more damage to a lot of these people incarcerated than not. So, Reginald, I'm going to put you back on speaker. And if you can, please continue.
Thank you, Leona. To address the issue that the young lady raised, what's her name again?
Rowena.
This call is from a facility and may be monitored and recorded.
What it is that this program introduces that has not been done before is it gives us clearance as prisoners with experience with rehabilitation. It gives us clearance to introduce our ideas and our understanding and put together a team of effective prisoners who have been dealing with rehabilitation and helping others to be rehabilitated, who have successfully been released. And what's greatly needed, and that's what I want to stress with this call, is with this interview and this show, is in order to bring the crime rate down, what we're going to have to do is to ensure that ACLU's organizations oversee this system of formal injustice. And what the point that Leona is raising is a very valid point, because they mix people who have mental illness with prisoners. And they're trying, hopefully the therapy, they'll be successful. This 2030 reentry program is a part of the process of moving away from warehousing prisoners, mixing prisoners with mental ill prisoners is a part of that warehousing process that doesn't have rehabilitation attached to it. because there are some prisoners who suffer from mental illnesses, mental conditions, who can be rehabilitated as well. But the system hasn't been geared towards rehabilitation. It's been geared towards punishment, warehousing, and incentive programs to bring prisoners conform to inhumane conditions for profit. Well, that model is a failed model. It's a failed model on its philosophy, and it's a failed model on its practice and results. Well, now, hopefully, they are sincerely allowing us to participate together in society at large, because they're inviting society at large to also participate in this rehabilitative process of reintroducing prisoners back into society. And they're changing our names from convicts and inmates. And then they changed the name of prisoners to offenders. Now they're changing the name of prisoners to residents. And that's a change in attitude and change in legal status and a change of mentality when it comes to approaching rehabilitation. More like, because in Norway, when you first get locked up, day one, they start rehabilitating you. And I really can't wait to read the book by Miriam Jacobs, where she wrote a book, and she's from the Netherlands, and she wrote a book called Suspended Justice, Concentration Camps in America. And that's something that we need to move away from, and this program is going to be helping us move away from that as we move forward with this program in 2030. If I haven't answered your question, please ask follow up with a further question to make sure that I answer all your questions.
Okay, I wanted to also mention to the audience, Reginald Clemens is at least among the four that I've interviewed throughout the past few years of wrongfully convicted. Reginald Clemens is one, Christopher Dunn is one, and these are four people in Missouri. Christopher Dunn, Reginald Clemens, Judy Pickens, and also Bertha Owens, all wrongfully convicted in prison. So we have to remember, too, that we have a large population of wrongfully convicted in the prisons, first-time offenders who were victims before becoming offenders. A lot of these incarcerated individuals were violated as children, went through traumas. They're just as much victims as many on the outside. So we have to also include and remember this as we speak. Jerry is back on as well. Jerry, would you like to say anything?
Sure. I mean, there's a couple of issues here where you said, yes, they were these issues a lot of times are a result of traumatization as a child, which is a huge problem. And a big thing with the Missouri Department of Corrections, I know itself, is within the reentry program, right, a lot of our clients have mental health issues that now, thanks to this reentry initiative, is finally being somewhat addressed. They're attempting to get us licenses as facilitators to handle these, because where the regular counselor goes home, you know, the mental health counselor here, and you're right about the medical care system throughout prisons nationwide really is deficient. It has been broken for a very long time, very, very long time.
I'd like to say something to that. Reginald mentioned a little while ago, he mentioned the mental illnesses, and I wanted to say something on that because you just mentioned traumas. I want to say real quickly, too, if you notice, the Department of Corrections around the country, when they evaluate incarcerated individuals, they try to label them mostly with antisocial behavior, when in fact many suffer from PTSD. But also, there's a lot of people that they're not mentally retarded, but they are mentally ill, a lot of them at the time of their crime. Many of them suffer from severe depression, and depression can cause someone to go either way. Depression can cause suicide or homicide, but there's so many other reasons why people have to look at each and every individual individually because people are stereotyping prisoners, which is wrong, very wrong. And Reginald,
I 100%, Leona, I agree with that 100%. You got the right guy on here now, because I myself feel that way, because I too have PTSD. I'm also an ex-military. I'm a vet. Whereas as a younger age, I was traumatized, but I never dealt with those traumas. And that led to, right, the core reasons of my addiction. Before I went in the military 30-some-odd years ago, I was not a heroin or cocaine addict, right? However, when I came out of the military, I was a full-blown addict and remained an addict for many, many, many years. It wasn't until I came through a program like we're offering here through the ITC program here in Missouri, which is the Intensive Therapeutic Community Program, that I got to them core issues of where my addiction began. And that's where, like I was getting ready to specifically say, as in the situations that you brought up, here we face problems of not only substance abuse, we are career counselors, we are family counselors.
And may be monitored and recorded.
We are trauma counselors. We are sexual abuse counselors. Sure.
Can I mention something about that, Jerry? You just mentioned it, career counselors, facilitators. I noticed in working with advocates and prisoners around the country, what's happening right now is there is a lot of people incarcerated like yourself that have become facilitators or helping the other prisoners. And this is something that I feel they should take into consideration when it comes to reducing the sentencing. Because there's a lot of people, even in Massachusetts, that are with the position of facilitating others.
And I 100% agree. That's one of the things that we as facilitators here are trying to get them to initiate, to take a look at. You know what? We have dedicated our lives now to helping others. But where is the incentive for us, right, other than we're just giving back? We recognize the harms that we've caused and the victims we've created through our individual crimes themselves. But where is the process, right, such as myself? I just received today, and Caldeer will verify, I just finally, after 7 years, received a hearing aid. I just got it today. So where is it that the mental health system here and the medical system throughout the prisons in general are willing to take a look at, as long as together with the court system, because here's the breakdown of it for real. When I came here, I was a union painter. Okay. I now, right, since coming here, I educated myself not only with being able to counsel people, I also got my paralegal degree. All right. And through that, I have filed a couple of suits myself through the court systems against medical. The problem is most of not only federal but state courts, they will rubber stamp that because they see the inmates, right? They're still looking at us where I was going before as a medieval type of punishment. They're not, some of them are so locked in, like our older judges, where you're talking about our sentencing is, right? They're locked into, hey, I've got to do this, I've got to do this, rather than look at what caused the person to commit the crime. Or look at, hey, maybe this person has another issue going on. They don't see it that way. They'd rather just be, hey, I'm going to give you a life sentence, or hey, I'm going to give you 30 years. When a lot of times those sentences, they may be within the sentencing guideline, they're way above the sentencing structure. So I can 100% agree with and sympathize with all of your concerns when it deals with the healthcare system here, because I'm a vet. I didn't see nowhere on the dotted line when I signed to protect our country 38 years ago over in all the police actions that I was involved in overseas. I did not see where it said, if you make a mistake and go to prison, we're going to cut you off. You're not going to receive the correct care, mental health and medical care that we have given you. And here, they're not going to do, I mean, literally, they will they fail to diagnose you, because if they diagnose you, they have to treat you, as we all know, right? So you have understaffing. I mean, these are all problems. I read in the Prison Legal News, Missouri alone is over 1,400 staff members short in their prisons, which who's really going to suffer? The prisoners. The issues that are at hand, and I'd like to know, how can we get a copy of that DOJ report that you have?
I will mail it to Reginald, and he can share it with you. And also, Reginald, I'm going to send you the book that Marion said she was going to send you.
Mm-hmm.
I will send it to you. I have it here. But I was also going to say this. The sentencing
commission. I speak very detailed about how the transaction takes place because there's conflict with the way that the prison system has designed to operate when it comes to warehousing or punishment or rehabilitation and release. They're not letting us get nailed right now.
I'm going to say this again. Everybody talks about their state and these things happening in their state. I've been doing national with a lot of advocates and prisoners around the country, and it's not just Missouri. It happens here in Massachusetts. It's happened in Florida, Texas, California, Iowa, Detroit, Michigan, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine. It happens all over, Louisiana, Mississippi. These are problems that are nationwide. I want to say real quickly, too, the Sentencing Commission voted to make retroactive the recent amendment to how the sentencing guidelines calculate criminal history. The courts began resentencing on February 1st, 2024. There are two different amendments will now apply retroactively. One affects some people who received two criminal history status points or people who were still under custody or supervision at the time of their offense. People who had fewer than seven criminal history points at sentencing and who received status points can ask the court to eliminate those 2 points, while those with seven or more criminal history points at sentencing would be eligible to eliminate 1 point. The other amendment would provide for a two-level downward adjustment for some defendants with zero criminal history points. Judges will be able to reduce the sentencing range by 2 levels if the defendants meet a long list of criteria. These are some of the recent amendments and recent changes that are coming about that they're working on with reform. So what you two men are talking about fits right into what's going on.
May I ask, is it federal or state?
This is both. Both the DOJ and also the Sentencing Commission, they're talking about federal and state prisons. Again, we have too many people incarcerated in this country, and it's costing this country way too much money.
Yeah,
and
know,
Reginald, what you mentioned too, was these large corporations. These large corporations are making a lot of money off of the penal system, off of these incarcerated people. We need to look at defunding not only the DOC, but defunding and giving bad reviews on these large corporations that are taking advantage of the incarcerated.
There are more. $25 billion for a 5-year contract to feed us. And since Aramore took over about 3 months ago, they've been feeding us bologna sandwiches and these fish patties that is really breaded fish or patties.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Fish oil, but there's not fish inside the bag. It's all bread. And that means that gets $9 million a year to feed 25,000 prisoners, right? We're not eating nowhere near well as the taxpayers need. And when it comes to medical care, there was a story about Parchment, that we call Parchment Prison down in Jackson, Mississippi. And Aramore is the area
monitored and recorded.
That comes out from the Missouri prison system now. And we're eating some of the biggest are green future meat. And
because of the medical care,
they wait mental care is one of the easiest things to look at because they let our teeth rot about our mouth. We can't get a filling put in our mouth. We can't get our teeth clean. We can't get regular checkups to prevent. And we don't, they won't even let us use regular toothbrushes. So that's even towards, maybe even towards the mentality within our system.
Country is that people are content and they don't do enough about it. Now, we had this project in Juneteenth, the whole month of June, where everyone was going to be calling in all of the media and calling in. That's another thing that they mentioned is that the media, they're going to be challenging the media too. But we need to start making calls to the media and getting them involved in going into the prisons and hearing from the incarcerated individuals. Also, we need to also make the point to contact our legislative members because they can make a difference, and I think sometimes they're too afraid because the union, the prison union, is so big. They need to step up the plate. They need to start looking into these things and making themselves more available to the incarcerated individuals.
Yes, definitely. And that's, again, that's why I love this program, this reentry 2030 program. Because he is opening the door in that direction to move away from mass incarceration. I don't foresee him holding any of them accountable. I don't foresee them because they make too much money together. But I do pray and thank God that there are people being able to make something happen in the extreme level of rehabilitation. And that's what we need to worry about. And we need support when it comes to the society on the outside. Because the governor is going to be running for governor again. Mike Parson is the governor of Missouri. He's not going to run for governor again. If the next governor comes in and decides to dismantle this program after it begins to make strides and successes, then a lot of the work we're doing is put off without public support and recognition of the work that we're doing. So we do need awareness of reentry 2030.
You have 1 minute left.
And that's what we're trying to do with anybody that can help bring awareness and help us to be
the caller has hung up.
Outside communication and contact. Please reach out to Ann Freesite. When we were in Leona, because I stay in touch with Leona on a regular basis. And we're going to be trying to start up a website also for reentry 2030.
And Reggie will be on, he'll be on again Monday. I wanted to say real quickly, too, I received something in the email, and it's possible that Michelle Obama might be running for the presidency. And also, I'm going to be interviewing a man who is from Ohio, who is also going to be running for the presidency. And I'm going to be talking with him tomorrow to find out more about this before we do the interview. But there's going to be changes, and everyone needs to start looking at writing to the media and encouraging them to start going into the prisons. We have 2.3 million people incarcerated, so we should at least be able to get 1 million people to write to the media to complain and to get them involved in going into the prisons. Rowena, do you have anything to say on this?
No, I don't. I was listening to some of the things that were said, so I'm learning the new things. I haven't done prison ministry in a little while, so I am going to keep my eye on what he's talking about, the reentry. And, of course, you know, that was my dissertation in grad school. My doctoral dissertation was on the prison pipeline. So as a teacher, I'm dealing with these issues that lead to all of these kids, the mentally ill, because most of the kids do have IEPs. They are special education. And then they get suspended a lot in school, and they go straight from school to jail most times. So there's a lot that needs to be done.
As you say, they do. They start out early, and as Reginald was saying, also a lot of these, there's a lot of people in prison who went in when they were even 15, 14 years of age that are now, these men, they went in, a lot of them went in when they were in their youth years or under the age of 25 as men. And now they're in their 60s and 70s and 80s. There's people in wheelchairs in the prisons. There's people with dementia and Alzheimer's. It's sad because there's no reason why these people should still be in prison when they themselves can't even take care of themselves.
Yeah, because I had to advocate for my brother a lot. He was always arrested for loitering, but he was a bipolar. And, of course, he was non-compliant with his medicine, but he wasn't violent. He wasn't stealing. He wasn't doing anything. But when they close all the mental health residential facilities, you'll find him hanging out. That's what a lot of the homeless people are.
Exactly. Donna Wynette is the founder of the Families and Friends for Individuals with Mental Illnesses, and she's been on the show numerous times. Donna is working on trying to get the Department of Mental Health more involved in treating these individuals incarcerated that are in Bridgewater State Hospital and other places. As you mentioned, since they closed down all these mental institutions around the country, they're using prisons as an alternative, and that's very, very wrong because these people are not qualified to handle people with psychological problems.
And then the thing is, you touched on, there's so many facets of this. It's like a lot of them also companies that use prison inmate work, labor, products out. So you got a lot of people that, a lot of areas we have to look at.
That's it. But thank God, like I say, the Department of Justice is starting to do something with this prison reform, and the Sentencing Commission is working on it. So, and what Reginald is talking about and Jerry are talking about with what they're working on, this is happening around the country with other incarcerated individuals who have been in prison for more than 20, 25 years, 30 years, 40 years, which these people have long rehabilitated themselves. It's not the Department of Corrections that's doing the work for them. It's them themselves that are doing it. And now they're helping other incarcerated. You know, the department gets funding for programs, and yet they have these director of volunteer programs where these directors of volunteer programs send emails around to different groups to try to get volunteers to go in and do exactly what they're getting funding to hire someone to do. I trained with the Department of Corrections in 2006 for 3 weeks. And it was at Bridgewater State Hospital. And I'll tell you one thing, I've seen how they operate. And this isn't just in Massachusetts, as I say, it's around the country. So Jerry and Reginald, step in, it's your show. Sorry.
They begin to see the black and brown and poor children and underprivileged children criminal records through the school system, through the education system, in order to begin to train them in Christian schools and incarceration for giving them bad jackets and everything and bad marks on their record and generating criminal records while in high school. The mentality of the dead warehouse and punishment mentality, it went got that deep. It's that deep. It's that serious in the minds of some people. The same people that are trying to strip the history of the truth with the same mentality of trying to maintain the consistency process. We have to bear in mind, when it comes to money, there are some people who are amoral. We as Americans who fight and die for this country cannot allow this country country to be overtaken and usurped by money. We can't put dollars above morality and humanity. If we want to rehabilitate the neutral earth and society, well, I would like to, when it comes to the pipeline of prison, there's numerous documentaries on it, and you can Google it. And I invite you to do some research because what we're being provided an opportunity to do is create a pipeline out of prison. I want to get away from the whole opportunity that's being presented because that's what it is. I see this as a turning point where there's a major shift. And I want to lean into that shift and embrace that shift and the humanity and the love of it. And before I get cut off, I wanted to mention the victims and the victims' rights organizations. They have a right to have prisons rehabilitated. They have a right to have a comfort of knowing that prisoners are not going to get out and reoffend. 85% of people that are incarcerated are going to be released. People who are crime victims have the right not to be afraid of that. And most victims, I advocate that I've heard, they're for rehabilitation. They don't believe in prisoners being abused and tortured and everything, especially not in their head. So I want to thank the victims for their involvement in their speaking out against the death penalty and speaking up for rehabilitation. And I hope that we can all work together to bring a country with a smaller and less crime rate and a smaller prison system so that we can have communities and wholesome neighborhoods that are working together.
Franz Dell from Amsterdam is actually willing to come to this country and speak to legislative members or anyone else, universities or whatever, anyone that wants to know more about their operating system and how their success rates with recidivism rates go. So they're ready to step in. Pardon?
Here, Leona, I agree with my teammates sitting next to me here. The problem I see, right, is, and I would too, I would like to thank the victims. I mean, they deserve to have that rehabilitation take place. And it's only recently, right, that we're moving forward to get that rehabilitation.
And maybe monitored and recorded.
That they're coming out of, finally, the old mindset. The problem still lays with these district judges, the judges that have been in office forever are not willing to come to that agreement in their mind, as you were speaking on, Leona, about fair sentencing.
Say
the person as we were discussing.
I want to mention one thing, and this is very important. When we speak of victims, and I talk about the victims on the outside all the time, but I also want people to know there are victims on the inside as well. The problem is we have people, you know, someone committed a crime the other day. It was a nonviolent crime. It was stealing or breaking into a store or something. And one of the people in the communities turned around and said, I hope he suffers. I hope he gets I hope he's miserable for the rest of his life. This is a standby, somebody standing by. If this man has that kind of mentality, he has the same mentality than a lot of these people in prison who were so angry at something that happened to them directly, and they ended up doing something and ended up in prison. This man was judging this person that committed this crime without knowing anything about it. But even if the man was wrong in trying to break into a store, this person on the outside should have said, this man needs help, or he needs to go to jail. They need to do something to rehabilitate him. But this man, you could tell in his face, he had so much hatred. And that's what we have in society today. We have people that are judging without knowing the full facts. And we have a system that makes somebody look 10 times worse than they are when they do their mugshots. Now, Donald Trump,
yeah,
they said, made himself look that evil. But I don't know if it was Donald Trump that made himself look that evil or if it was them. But this is what they do. They make people who they arrest in charge make them look, some kind of graphic that they do to make them look 10 times worse than they are. And this is a known fact.
Those are sad facts, but they are true. The bad part about that is they go out of their way to ensure that you look bad. And just like you're telling me about the gentleman that was sitting there saying, I knew he gets what he deserves, right, standing outside a place that was broken. And by no means do I approve of that type of behavior, right? However, it is that type of medieval mentality that me and Reginald are speaking about right now. It's that type of caveman validity that these people, right, are stuck in rather than wanting to advance towards a future where, you know what, there's actual rehabilitation going on here. They would like to have people here tortured. And they do. It still does largely happen within the prison system. I mean, I read so much in the prison legal news, and I study the law now. It's horrific to me that people are still stuck in that mentality. And myself, I'm 58 years old. This is the way people thought back in the 70s. Hey, man, we need to move forward to 2024, not, you know, 1965.
You know what they forget?
So,
they forget that overseers of the incarcerated are human beings as well. And they have the mentality of criminal activity just like anybody else. And there's a lot of people who are overseeing the incarcerated individuals. We hear about the high rates of suicide in the prisons in this country. We hear about suicide, but we don't hear what caused their suicide or if they were actual suicides or they were homicides. We have a criminal behavior in overseers in the United States of America. And that's something people overlook because someone's wearing a uniform or in power or has a title. They seem to overlook the fact that these people can have criminal activities themselves. There was a mentally ill man
right.
in Florida. His name was Daryl Rainey. He was put in the shower, and the shower was turned up to 180 degrees. And they scalded that man alive. They locked him in that shower. And everyone on that block could hear this man screaming for his life. This was Daryl Rainey. He's all over the internet. People can just type it in. A prisoner that was mentally retarded, mentally ill, and they scalded him alive. They said nothing was left of his body, the skin, the flesh, everything separated from the bones. These are mental activities, criminal activities of overseas.
Do you know, Leona, the difference between a responsible person and a criminal? Of a criminal solution that responsible person uses and how often he uses it to apply to solving his problem. Everyone, as you're saying, right, thinks criminally. They just do. I mean, when you come up to a stoplight, here's a prime example. You come to a stoplight and that light hasn't turned red yet and it's yellow. Some people, right, will weigh their options and say no and stop at that yellow light. Others, right, they'll criminally evaluate that and run that light, hoping that it does not change color. You follow what I'm saying? I feel the pain in your voice by making that statement. You know, people on average, everyone basically thinks like a criminal. It's just they don't all use that criminal tactic to accomplish their goal. And even when we use a criminal tactic to accomplish our goal, right, some of us, like as in the crime that I am here for, right, which is involuntary manslaughter, the only crime that has no intent, right? There was no intent for me to basically want to hurt someone. However, right, the judge's intent when he sentenced me to 41 consecutive years was to give me life for a car accident. I can agree with I deserve to come to prison, right? But in their mindset, they were doing what the voters wanted them to do.
What people say from other countries.
I can't agree with that anymore.
What people say from other countries, and I've interviewed a few of them, from Germany as well, is that the United States has so much hatred and racism. They have so much retaliation and vengeance.
Yeah.
That's why we have mass incarceration. And then Mariam Jacobs, also from the Netherlands, speaks about these big corporations, as Reginald mentioned. So we're not only dealing with hardcore criminals that oversee, we're dealing with greedy, corrupt, large corporations making money off the incarcerated. Then we're dealing with these people who are so vicious that they're killing off mentally ill people in prisons. Then we're dealing with the racism.
Right.
We're dealing with all it's sick. It's this country to me is a function.
There's a ring of judges up in New York that are selling kids to the prison system.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
And these are politicians? I mean, these are people in government?
Yeah.
Selling children to the prison?
Selling them to the prison. One judge just got sentenced. Was it last year or the year before when they found out? But it's so hard to call a judge and investigate because they are in charge of this investigation.
Mm-hmm. Internal investigations. We try to advocate for independent providers, investigators. Department of Justice right now, people are trying to get them to go in to investigate some of these prisons here, even in Massachusetts. But the Department of Corrections, people need to call the Department of Corrections, whatever state it's in, for whatever injustice is going on in the prisons. Let them see that it's the prison overseers that as well that need to be not only investigated, but evaluated, drug tested, and everything else. And I'll tell you, when I was in training, I went to drink from the faucet in the prison, and I was told not to drink from it. They had a room where the help goes to get clean, healthy water. They let the prisoners drink the dirty water.
I've been in prison for my incarceration. Potosi Correctional Center, Montclair with the ERTCC, Eastern Reception Diagnostic Correctional Center, now Jefferson City Correctional Center, and other prisoners come in to go on to drink the water. They're told that they're given bottled water that the prison receives for the prisoners. But they don't give it to the prisoners. They give it to the staff.
Exactly.
And it's a proven fact that our people hurt me. And I'm realizing that and understanding that has allowed me to look past, allowed me to sit down and engage it. I don't justify it.
You have 1 minute left.
Reggie, I want to say real quickly, you mentioned these things. First of all, I wanted to say I can't send you that book I was telling you about because I just realized it's going to the prison, but I'll get it to you somehow. But that recent shooting in Jacksonville, Florida, where those three blacks were killed and the white committed suicide, you know what? I don't blame that young man. I blame his parents. We have people in this society today that have so much hatred in them. They pass it on to
monitored and recorded.
They pass it on to their children. And when their children do something like this, the parents can be very proud of themselves to know their child is not only dead, but their child tried to please them and killing somebody that was so hated, people that they didn't even know. We live in a society today where too many parents are teaching their kids too much hatred. And those kids are the ones that suffer, not the parents, but the kids and the families of other people's children.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye. The caller has hung up. Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Generational abuse. I'm saying when the cycle of generational abuse is verbal abuse, words matter. I often listen to people. One of the things I try to break people of when I'm trying to help them rehabilitate themselves, I try to break them of speaking to themselves, speaking to themselves in negative connotations, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you tell yourself, you tell yourself you're a failure. If you tell yourself you're mentally challenged or retarded, if you tell yourself, if you tell yourself you're mentally challenged and have a learning disability, and the system tells you that enough, then it don't matter what genius you were born with, it's suppressed by what you believe. And if you believe that you don't have anything coming in life and you can't accomplish anything in life, and that you're less than, and you're treated as less than on a continuous basis, then that becomes your identity. And that's the cycle that we have to break. Because that verbal abuse, it carries over generationally. The physical abuse, especially when it comes to sexual abuse, because like R. Kelly is a perfect example. He was molested as a child, and he suffered from arrested development. And I hate that the media didn't get into the arrested development and the effects of, instead of just demonizing and vilifying R. Kelly, and making that their focus, to sensationalized story. They need to begin to get more off and go deeper than that. Be mature about covering these stories and covering these facts and covering what's really going on so that we can all begin to understand how to rehabilitate one another and so we can all understand how much help we do need. America is really suffering from extreme trauma. The repeated gun violence, the cycle of gun violence is a symptom of extreme trauma. And I see that trauma within prisoners that I deal with. I see that trauma within the human beings that I deal with in prison. I see people in prison as human beings first so that they can start seeing themselves as human beings.
Exactly.
And that identity rehabilitation, that identity aspect has a lot to do with the trajectory of a person's life that they believe they can't accomplish what they were meant to do. That man, that young man down there, Florida, just the people that killed himself. He probably killed himself because he realized the monstrous thing that he just done.
Mm-hmm.
After he did it out of all that rage and anger, looked at the bloodshed and his humanity couldn't deal with it. That's where a lot of murders are. Yeah.
It's a lack of role models in this country today. And I'll tell you, before people in leadership roles, if they committed a crime, they got it worse than the people that are in prison now because they were supposed to be role models. Years ago, they were punished more. Now they get a slap on the hand, which only causes them to commit, continue to do what they do? And Reginald, what I wanted to say as well is this is going to be something that will need to continue as well. So if you want to do something before next Monday, you know, we can do something like tomorrow or probably Friday, but this is something that should be continuing. But the thing is, if at all possible, we can do it without a lot of echoing and distraction, because I'm going to be listening to this after the show to see, you know, how clear it was. But with the two calls at the, from the same place and a lot of the background, it's very difficult.
So we'll try working on audio a little bit, figure something up. It might be more fruitful to use, though, because they have all our time. It should be available next week when we call Monday, because I definitely will call back again next Monday at 4:30.
I think it's really good, because the topics that you're discussing is something that right now, as I say, the Department of Justice and also the Sentencing Commission is working on, but a lot of advocates are looking at it too. So what you're working on and what others are working on around the country is positive, and I hope that we can see some progress come from it.
Yeah, and I will look forward to doing progress report, and what it is that we're planning on, you know, how much we've accomplished along the lines of what the plan and trajectory is. There's a lot going on that I have mentioned on this, in this interview, and I don't know how a lot but on the other ground that we've accomplished, because it's a beautiful thing. It's like a flower coming up to the crack of asphalt. It's going to take the fight and struggle to get to the point where this flower blossoms and it's free. And I thank you all for the opportunity to be on here. Again, my name is Reginald Clemens. I'm a former death row inmate, and I now have a life sentence with parole. I've been locked up for 32 years, but prison sentence is 24 years. My humanity and the prayer and love of the people that helped fight to save my life and helped me get to the position where I had a possibility. But more importantly, I love the opportunity to help other people and keep you all informed about the efforts we're having, the efforts we're taking in here to come to criminal justice reform. And then on
that,
and we're putting. And again, thank you, everybody, for listening and the opportunity to speak out.
I thank you, and Jerry, I thank you for coming on. And Rowena, it's always a pleasure to be talking with you. Again, Rowena she's been doing an awful lot too with the advocates. And as Reginald mentioned, we need to talk more about these issues, because these things need to be resolved. But again, I'm going to say, with all of these mass shootings that are going on around the country, a lot of it's being done by young children who are being taught hatred, who are being taught racism, who are being taught to do just the opposite of what the people they're killing are trying to do. We're trying to bring unity, not division. So I hope and pray that everyone will contact the media, tell them that they need to go into the prisons, meet with the prisoners, that they need to start looking at all these things that are going on. And I hope and pray everyone will be listening in when we have the show again the next time. But we have to come up with a solution, because too many innocent people are now dying, and we have to look at those in the prisons who have been in long enough. They're rehabilitated. They're trying to do the right thing now, helping other incarcerated individuals. A lot of these young kids going in have no role models anymore on the outside. So let's keep them all in prayer. Let's support them any way we can. Jerry, do you have anything more to say?
Yeah, well, I would like to close by once again thanking you for giving me the opportunity to sit with Calvier. And, I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, Reginald, I apologize for that. I love my job as a facilitator here. I love the fact that I'm able to now give back. I love doing what I do, being able to interact and help people see the arrested development that we spoke about. Because, just like you're saying, our younger generation is troubled right now, and they are stuck, and it's due to the traumas that are being inflicted upon them. So we need to start really by educating our youth. As we all know, by watching TV and the news, that, you know what, it's giving up on them. It's like setting them in front of a computer instead of giving them actual life application skills. They are attempting to teach them only by looking at something. And visual is cool, but you have to be involved within, you know, your life situations for you to actually learn life skills and have life experiences. Once again, my name is Jerry Husky.
This call is from a commercial facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Consecutive year sentence here at the Jefferson City Correctional Center for involuntary manslaughter. My parole date is 2036. I thank everyone for allowing me to participate today, and I hope to come back again if I'm invited. I love talking about the things and the issues that we have discussed. This is something that I thoroughly enjoy my job with. And I hope to do the best I can do so that the victims out there, it pays tribute to them and the fact that I'm able to help these men reassimilate back into society as productive members. So I got to thank you all again, and I appreciate everything. And you allowed me to speak today, Leona.
I'll tell you, the guest we're going to have on again Wednesday, Franz Dow, I will say he's been advocating with some advocates out of Texas, and he's talking about projects that they're working on. They're working on various projects, and he said if people around the country can start working on projects, and one of the projects that I see happening in the city, the government has a lot of surplus properties, a lot of surplus, and buildings, they're dilapidated buildings in these cities around the country. If they were to take these former incarcerated individuals, even the immigrants that they complain so much about, and former incarcerated and others, to kind of like renovate these buildings, give them the tools to work with, help them to get it going, renovate these buildings, improve the communities, and then have these people that are coming out of prisoners like yourself that are doing actually some good work, to open up some offices in these buildings, continue the work that you're doing with those on the outside as well. It can be done.
Well,
people have to come together.
I'm hoping to be invited again. And like I said, I've enjoyed this time, and I thank all of you, and I thank you for listening. And I also, I'm looking forward to this information that you'll be sending to Reginald or somehow. I mean,
I'll be printing it out.
You know, they came up with this great idea that they'll stop incoming mail due to the influx of drugs. Well, now here it is, months later after they've done this, once again, they've harmed us, the inmates.
I tell everyone, go on the internet and type in guards caught smuggling drugs into the prisons, and you're going to see where all the drugs are coming in. It's all over the internet. Guards, COs, bringing drugs into the prison. This is all around the country. So there's
right.
No,
it's not the inmates. It's definitely not the inmates. I read another article on Prison Legal News that they did a study here on Missouri and our mail process, and it's just not coming in through the mail. Yet the amount of OPs has increased. It's a definite problem that needs to be looked at.
Prison Legal News. Prison Legal News is good. They report everything, and I love that group, that news, because they get all information people are not aware of.
I love it. I mean, my friend who's a retired attorney, matter of fact, he's in Vermont now. He makes sure I get a subscription to it. I mean, and I share it with everyone here. So, like I said again, I love my job. I love doing what I do. I love the fact that now I have been given the opportunity to give back to this community.
And you're welcome to come back on the show anytime at all.
Well, I appreciate that. I truly appreciate that. You know, next time hopefully the original will have something worked out to where it's not as much reverberation and to where we can hear better.
I'm going to be doing I will be doing the show for Reggie on Mondays for at least for a few weeks. I don't know if I can continue to do it. I'm hoping that he'll be able to find someone that will be able to take over and do it for him. But I will do it until he can find someone that can do it. And I do myself on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. I do interviews. I have Fridays and Saturdays open if anybody wants to use the studio. Rowena, that includes you if you want to use the studio for your own information, for your own shows, to do whatever you'd like to do on those 2 days. But any time at all, you call in and I will bring you on in so you can join the conversations. Audience, I want to thank all of you for listening in today. Thank you all. Tomorrow we'll be doing the same thing. It'll be from 6:30 Eastern Daylight Time. And Wednesday we will have Franz Dahl and his guest on with us at 2 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. And they will be talking the comparison between the prisons in the United States and the prisons in other countries, the comparison between their countries, maximum 25 years, unless it's really severe crimes, compared to the life and life without and death row sentencing in the United States of America. I hope everyone will join us, and feel free to call in anytime and your concerns, your opinions, your feedback, whatever the case may be. Thank you so much for coming on. Jerry, again, thank you. Thank Reginald for me, and also Rowena, thank you so much for joining as well.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, and I thank all the listeners out there for being patient.
And we are now going to end this
episode. Have a good night.
For listening in.
The caller has hung up.